healing energy to AJ.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Dan Novak. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Ashley and John Russell bring us news out of Japan.
Japan's Princess Mako on Tuesday quietly married a commoner without traditional wedding celebrations. She said her marriage to her former university classmate, Kei Komuro, was a necessary choice to live while cherishing our hearts. Komuro added, "I love Mako. I live only once, and I want to spend it with someone I love." The marriage to Komuro cost Mako her royal position and title. She also received her husband's family name, the first time she has had a family name. Most Japanese women must drop their own family name after marriage because of a law requiring only one family name for a married couple.
The couple's marriage document made the union official on Tuesday morning, the Imperial Household Agency said. There were no royal marriage ceremonies for the couple. The agency admitted that many Japanese have not welcomed their marriage. Mako earlier refused to accept a 140 million yen, about $1.23 million, payment offered to her for leaving the imperial family. She is the first imperial family member since World War II to not receive the payment. She chose to not accept the payment because of criticism of the marriage. Mako turned 30 years old 3 days before the marriage. She is a niece of Emperor Naruhito. She and Komuro attended school together at Tokyo's International Christian University. The couple announced in September 2017 that they planned to marry the following year. But 2 months after their announcement, the media began reporting about a financial dispute between Komuro's mother and her former fiancé. The man claimed Komuro and his mother had not repaid a debt of about $35,000. The couple's wedding was suspended.
On Tuesday morning, Mako left the palace wearing a light blue dress and holding flowers. She bowed outside the palace to her parents, Crown Prince Akishino and Crown Princess Kiko, and hugged her sister Kako. The couple did not answer questions at a news conference Tuesday. Mako had expressed unease about giving answers in person. Instead, they provided written answers to questions sent by the media ahead of time, including those about Komuro's mother's financial issues. Mako is recovering from what palace doctors described earlier this month as severe stress from continued media criticism. "We have been saddened, as false information has been taken as fact, and that unfounded stories have spread," Mako said in a written answer to one of the questions. Komuro, who is 30 years old, left for New York in 2018 to study law. He returned to Japan last month. His hair was tied back at the time. The look drew attention as a strong statement for someone marrying a princess in the traditional imperial family. It added to the media's criticism of him. The couple will move together to New York to start a new life. Many in Tokyo wished them good luck. "Congratulations," said office worker Yasuhiro Suzuki. "I hope people in America will welcome them." Speaking about her mental health issues, Mako noted that many people have difficulty and hurt feelings while trying to protect their hearts. She added that she hoped our society will have a place where more people can live and protect their hearts with the help of warm help and support from others.
Mako is not the only female royal whose mental health was affected by attacks from inside and outside the palace. Her grandmother, Empress Emerita Michiko, was the first commoner to marry into the Japanese imperial family. She collapsed and temporarily lost her voice in 1993, following continued negative media attention. Empress Masako is a Harvard-educated former diplomat. She has had a mental condition for nearly 20 years, in part because of criticism over not producing a boy who would become emperor. Some critics say Mako's marriage brings attention to the difficulties faced by women in the Japanese imperial family. Mako's loss of her royal position comes from the imperial house law, which permits only male succession. Female imperial family members must leave if they marry commoners. The male-only succession tradition leaves only Akishino and his son, Prince Hisahito, in line to take the place of Emperor Naruhito. A group of government-appointed experts is discussing ways to create a different succession system. But conservatives still reject female succession and permitting women to be at the head of the imperial family. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Brothers who cut hair in northern India are offering more than just the usual haircut. They are making art. Brothers Rajwinder and Gurwinder Singh Sidhu are using their customers' heads and hair to make their art. They cut hair into the shapes of famous people and places, from the face of singer Michael Jackson to the towers of the Taj Mahal. The barbers use different kinds of scissors and trimmers to get the look just right. Rajwinder is the younger of the two brothers. He said they got their start by offering free haircuts to anyone we could get a hold of. Now the brothers, who are 29 and 31 years old, have more experience. They charge their customers up to $30 for their special cuts. The customers have brought the brothers pictures of famous Bollywood actors, sports stars, and even Mickey Mouse. The customers say they want something that will create interest at social gatherings or parties. Darbar Singh got a haircut that looked like the Taj Mahal on the day the Reuters news agency visited the brothers' business. "The monument is very beautiful," he said. He added that his special haircut will help him stand out in the crowd. I'm Dan Friedel. Cyberbullying is the use of electronic communication to threaten or insult someone. Concern over cyberbullying has been at the center of recent criticism directed at social media companies. Last month, Facebook delayed the development of its child version of Instagram after opposition from American lawmakers and safety advocacy organizations. More than 40 state attorneys general wrote a letter to Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, urging him to stop the release of the project. Social media can be detrimental to the health and well-being of children, and kids' Instagram could make cyberbullying worse, the letter said. Facebook's own data showed that Instagram can be harmful to teens' mental health, especially girls. The information was first reported by the Wall Street Journal last September. Cyberbullying also appears to be worse among girls, says a 2019 survey by the National Center for Education Statistics. While 20.4% of students bullied online were girls, 10.9% were boys. Of the 22% of all kids ages 12 to 18 that were bullied during the school year, 16% of students said they were bullied electronically. A study by the organization Common Sense Media in 2019 found that teenagers use an average of 7 hours, 22 minutes of entertainment media a day, and that does not include time using media for school. Pew Research said the amount of time that children spent online also increased during the pandemic. With more time online comes a higher risk of exposure to cyberbullying. Cyberbullying can make feelings of depression worse and negatively impact mental health. Common Sense found that 38% of teens and young adults were depressed in 2020. Up from 25% 2 years before. Higher levels of depression also were connected to higher levels of social media use. Almost all young people use some form of social media, but may not know the risks they face online. October is National Bullying Prevention Awareness Month. Using free resources from stopbullying.gov, and Common Sense Education, here are ways adults can help children deal with cyberbullying. A child can be involved in cyberbullying in different ways. They can bully, be bullied, or witness the bullying of others. The more digital forms of communication a child uses, the more exposure he or she may get to cyberbullying. Parents, teachers, and other adults need to be aware of children's online usage. Some warning signs that a child may be involved in cyberbullying are spending much more or less time on electronic devices, including texting, hiding their screen when others are near, and avoiding discussion about what they are doing on their device, closing social media accounts and opening new ones, avoiding social situations, even ones that were enjoyed in the past, becoming depressed or losing interest in people and activities.
Cyberbullying is like other forms of bullying and should be handled in a similar way. If a child is being cyberbullied, adults should support the child being bullied and address the behavior of the child doing the bullying. Adults should show children that cyberbullying is something serious that should be stopped. If a child sees hateful content online, there are a few easy ways they can deal with it. The child could report the content anonymously, as hateful speech violates most websites' terms of service. They can also block the person from posting abusive content. While ignoring posts might seem easier than blocking someone, it will not make the problem go away. Adults can try to make their kids feel more empathy towards others and consider how other people feel. They should see whether more help is needed for those involved, like speaking to a guidance counselor or mental health professional. Cyberbullying may be impossible to stop completely, but parents could watch their child's behavior and internet time. France has taken stronger measures against cyberbullying. In January, the country created a special court to try online crimes, including harassment and bullying. 11 people were convicted this summer of using the internet to harass a teenage girl, including sending her death threats. I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By February 1st, 1861, 7 southern states had withdrawn from the United States of America. They created their own independent nation, the Confederate States of America. The South seceded because Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, had been elected president. Southerners believed he would support a constitutional ban on slavery. They were afraid their way of life would soon end. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the beginning of Abraham Lincoln's presidency.
President-elect Lincoln traveled by train from his home in Illinois to Washington, D.C. Along the way, he stopped to make speeches. As he got closer to Washington, he was warned that a mob was planning to attack the train. He had to continue his trip in secret. Lincoln arrived in Washington 9 days before his inauguration. It was a busy time. He talked with many people, including delegates to a peace convention. Every state was represented at the convention, except the states that had seceded. The delegates urged Lincoln to support slavery. They urged him not to go to war over the issue. Lincoln said only that he would faithfully execute the duties of president of all the United States. He said he would protect and defend the American Constitution.
While Lincoln waited for Inauguration Day, he chose the members of his cabinet. He wanted men representing all opposing groups in the Republican Party. He hoped this would unite the party and give him support in the difficult years ahead. Lincoln chose William Seward as Secretary of State, Salmon Chase as Treasury Secretary, Gideon Welles as Navy Secretary, and Montgomery Blair as Postmaster General. Seward did not like Chase, Welles, or Blair. He told Lincoln that he could not serve in the cabinet with them. He said they would never be able to work together. Lincoln answered that he would be happy to make Seward ambassador to Britain instead of Secretary of State. Seward gave up the argument and agreed to join the cabinet.
Inauguration Day was the 4th of March. President-elect Lincoln rode to the ceremony with outgoing President James Buchanan. Buchanan was ready to give up his power. He told Lincoln, "If you are as happy to get into the White House as I am to get out of it, you must be the happiest man alive." The inaugural ceremony took place outside the Capitol building. Lincoln was to give his inaugural speech before being sworn in. He had worked hard on the speech. He wanted to say clearly what his policy would be on slavery and secession. These were the issues which divided the country. These were the issues which were leading the country to civil war. This is what Lincoln said.
"There seems to be some fear among the people of the southern states that because a Republican administration is coming to power, their property and their peace and personal security are threatened. There has never been any reasonable cause for such fears. In fact, much evidence to the contrary has existed, open to their inspection. It is found in nearly all my published speeches. In one of those speeches, I declared that I had no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I said I believed I had no legal right to do so, and no wish to do so. This statement is still true. I can only say that the property, peace, and security of no part of the country are to be in any way endangered by the incoming administration."
Lincoln noted that 72 years had passed since the first president was inaugurated. "Since then," he said, 15 men had led the nation through many dangers, generally with great success." He went on,
"I now begin the same job under great difficulty. The breaking up of the Federal Union, before only threatened, now is attempted. I believe that under universal law and the Constitution, the union of these states is permanent. This is shown by the history of the Union itself. The Union is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. It was continued by the Declaration of Independence in 1776. It grew further under the Articles of Confederation in 1778. And finally, in 1787, one of the declared reasons for establishing the Constitution of the United States was to form a more perfect union. I therefore believe that, in view of the Constitution and the laws, the Union is not broken. I shall make sure, as the Constitution orders me to do, that the laws of the Union are obeyed in all the states. In doing this, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence. and there shall be none, unless it be forced upon the national government. The power given to me will be used to hold, occupy, and possess the property and places belonging to the government, and to collect the taxes. But beyond what is necessary for these purposes, there will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere.
Lincoln then repeated some statements he had made during his campaign for president. He used them to explain the differences between North and South. One part of the country, he said, believes slavery is right and should be extended. The other part believes slavery is wrong and should not be extended. This, he said, was the only important dispute. Lincoln admitted that even if the dispute could be settled peacefully, there were those who wanted to see the Union destroyed. He said his words were not meant for them. They were meant only for those people who really loved the Union. He said,
"Physically speaking, we cannot separate. We cannot remove our sections from each other, nor build an impassable wall between them. A husband and wife may be divorced and go away from or out of the reach of each other. But the different parts of our country cannot do this. They must remain face to face, and relations, friendly or hostile, must continue between them. Is it possible to make those relations better after separation than before? Can aliens make treaties easier than friends can make laws? Can treaties be more faithfully enforced between aliens than laws can be enforced among friends? My countrymen, one and all, think calmly and well upon this subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. In your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the great issue of civil war. The government will not attack you. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though emotion may have damaged them, it must not break our ties of love."
Abraham Lincoln then placed his hand on the Christian holy book, the Bible. The Chief Justice of the United States then spoke the presidential oath. Lincoln repeated the words, and the United States had a new president. Lincoln's first crisis came quickly. It was a problem left unsolved by the outgoing president. Lincoln had to decide immediately what to do about the federal fort in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina, Fort Sumter. The fort was surrounded by Southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the harbor. The federal troops inside Fort Sumter were getting dangerously low on food. But any attempt to send more men or supplies would be seen as an act of war, civil war.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.